Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to all of you. I am so happy to see you all here. It is an unbelievable joy to me, these meetings where we can gather together from all over the world, and to see the list of you here from all the places that you are joining us from is a great miracle and a wonder to me. And I'm very grateful for your presence here. So thank you very much for coming. Many of you may know that today is in traditional Indian spiritual ideas, a day called Guru Purnima, which takes place always on the full moon of July-August, which commemorates, well, what it's come to commemorate or what it's come to be seen as is a day in which disciples and devotees of a guru can bring offerings of gratitude and support to their gurus. It initially was not called Guru Purnima. It was called Vyasa Purnima, in honor of the man who is said to have compiled the Vedas, who gave structure to them, who divided them into their four parts and added organization throughout. This is also the person who is thought to be the author of the Brahma Sutras, which are the heart of Vedanta, and of the Mahabharata. So it used to be called Vyasa Purnima, and it was a day that was spent honoring the memory of this great man who did work of great value to us all. As it happened, gurus of later times changed the name themselves so that it could be seen as an occasion to receive offerings to them from their disciples. Now, I don't have any problem with that. I am happy for any arising of gratitude within any human minds toward anything whatsoever. It is a gift of God, the experience of gratitude. But it is my experience and the experience of many of us that the whole principle of guru worship, along with the worship of spiritual utterance and spiritual understanding, have never been of much use to us, except maybe as entertainment, as experiences and states that are delightful and feel good. So, rather than speak about devotion to the guru, I thought that on this day today, I might tell you a little story about how this whole practice of spiritual utterance and spiritual ideation came to be in the beginning of the period from which the Vedas, the Upanishads, and all the other gorgeous Indian spiritual ideation arose. I have recently been reading history, and I was surprised at some of the really delightful, unexpected, counterintuitive twists that come from investigating into the way that these things came to be. It began with the Aryan peoples, who from ancient times inhabited what are now the southern steppes of Russia. For most of their history, they farmed. They were peaceful. They farmed. They kept herds of domestic animals, and they lived mainly in peace and harmony with each other and with the earth and with the animals that provided them with sustenance for hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. This state of simplicity and peace prevailed. And then, now I'm going to use some dates here, but keep in mind that these dates are controversial, that there's difference of opinion about when all these things actually took place. But the consensus is that around 1400 years B.C., a segment of these people came in contact with a people known as the Hittites, which occupied what is now modern Turkey to the northwest of the steppes where the Aryan peoples lived. And from the Hittites, they learned for the first time to domesticate horses and acquired from the Hittites war chariots and military skills, so that for the first time in their history, the whole idea of military activity and conquest and making your living by stealing from your neighbor arose among these peoples. They came back and they began to use their new skills and their new technology, as would be expected, to prey upon their erstwhile neighbors and friends and family. And this this situation of warfare and cowboys rustling the cattle and stealing the goods of the other people prevailed for some time. Around 1000 B.C. or so, a great prophet whose name you are probably familiar with, Zoroaster, was born and created a religious philosophy to provide help and sustenance to those who were victimized by the Mitanni, who were the cowboys who had learned their skill from the Hittites. And Zoroaster created a religion in which, for the first time, there was a spiritual concept of good and evil, of the good against the bad, and the condemnation of evil behavior and the celebration of good behavior and so forth. Of course, religion has only so much effect against war chariots and horses and spears. So the best that could happen is that the people who followed Zoroaster and the religion which came to be known as Zoroastrianism, the best that could happen would be that they attained some solace for their suffering and their woes and some sense of community. And eventually these folks, this segment of the Aryan peoples, migrated away from the cowboys into what is now Iran or Persia and settled there to become, I suppose, the Persians and now the Iranians. The Mitanni, the cowboys, migrated, drifted in their cowboy ways of rape and pillage and so forth into the northwestern part of India, and brought with them the beginning of the Vedas and the Sanskrit language and the gods Mitra, Varuna, Indra, and Nasatya with them. They ran roughshod over the area. They took them several hundred years before they spread into the Ganges Basin, but they did eventually. They, as is to be expected, over time they abandoned their militaristic practices and their ways of rampaging and stealing and all of that, and began to settle into settlements. And although they did continue to move, they were a migrant type of people, and they did continue to move generally southeast into the heart of India. And as time went on, the ideas and the concepts and the teachings that made up the Vedas were perfected, and with discussion and consideration and reflection, they became more refined and more subtle and more interesting, really. There came a time, finally, when there was a kind of a priesthood, not exactly a priesthood, but a group of people who were familiar with the Vedic teachings and the ideas that arose around them. And these were the rishis. And among the rishis, finally, around 800 or 900 BC, according to most, the concept of Brahman arose among them, the concept of a reality that was ineffable, indescribable, about which nothing can be said, and which infused and permeated everything, arose among these previously rapacious peoples. And they began to talk about the idea of Brahman, about the idea of a reality that permeated all and that was not susceptible to having any ideas about it or having anything to say about it. And this, the sweetness of this concept so enthralled them that they began to play a game periodically, in which the rishis would gather with the people around a fire, I suppose, and one of them would begin to ask unanswerable questions about the nature of Brahman. The person who was asked the question would make some attempt, which would, of course, be unsuccessful, to respond to that, and would, after having made his attempt to respond to the unanswerable question about the nature of Brahman, would compose his own fundamentally unanswerable question about the nature of Brahman. And so it would go, and it went on for some time, this game in which the questions and answers about Brahman and its nature were offered and received and reflected upon and talked about, until finally they would reach the point where they all would fall into a stunned silence at the hugeness and vastness of the indescribability of reality. And that, of course, was the object of the game. It was the attainment of this state, this samadhi of silence and awe at the indescribability of reality. And of course, they all knew, all the participants must have known that that was the purpose of the game, and that the game itself was, for in large part, in most part, not in order to give them any understandings or any final enlightenments or any final realizations, but the purpose of the game was only to invoke in them this state of awe and stunned silence, this sweet taste of reality. And over time, so far as I can see, over time, it is this that we have ourselves adopted as the main means and method of spiritual discourse. The main means and method and purpose of spiritual discourse is to gain understanding of that which cannot be understood, and through that to gain the samadhi state of awe and adoration and silence at the magnificence and the vastness of this ineffable reality that we are. So, I, as most of you know, I have not much interest in spiritual understanding. I have not much regard or see much value in the seeking after spiritual understanding. This, after all, has been what we have been doing, all pretty much that we have been doing, for so many thousands of years, to no good effect at all, so far as I can tell. We are here in this country, in this time, still following the same paths and the same ways of doing things and the same expectations that have done so little good for anybody for all of these years. So I do see that spiritual understanding can be quite sweet and can be quite a desirable and beautiful experience, but it can't give us anything. And the clearer we are on the actual purpose and the actual possibility of these games that we play, on them, and the more likely we may be to be willing to hear that reality is not spiritual. That reality has nothing whatsoever to do with any delicious understanding of anything. That reality is you. Always has been you. When the rishis thousands of years ago were talking about it in order to stun themselves into samadhi, it was you they were talking about. It's you that they're talking about now. The old ways have been of no use to us. None. Except to get us where we are. So I don't... It's not that I think that there's anything bad or despicable about spiritual understanding or spiritual aspiration or spiritual utterance. It's just that it's beside the point. Just as most of what we do with our life is beside the point of realizing the truth of what I am. Being finished with the false belief that all that I am is this life. No spiritual understanding can free you of that belief. No understanding at all that occurs within this life can have any use to you within that belief. So, here it is, Guru Purnima, or Vyasa Purnima, or whatever. And here we are, still, the same, unchanged, unmoving, needing nothing, helped and hurt by nothing whatsoever that comes and goes within these lives. Here we are, still the same. So I come to speak to you not about devotion to the Guru or devotion to Brahman or devotion to anything at all. I don't come to speak to you to persuade you to abandon devotion to the Guru or devotion to Brahman or devotion to anything at all either. I come to speak to you about the possibility, ever present, always here, that has nothing to do with spiritual anything, that has nothing to do with not spiritual anything, to look at yourself directly. And in so doing, to free yourself of the belief that what you are is this life. Nothing else can do that. Nothing you can do, nothing you can talk yourself into, no states that you can cause to occur within you, no states that come and go within you, no ideas at all can free you of this false belief that you are your life and that you are at stake in everything that occurs within this life, that you are on the line with every thought that appears within you, that you are helped or hurt by every movement of the tendencies that come and go within you. Nothing in that can do that for you. no clearing of the mind, no silence of the mind, no stopping of thought, no transmission from the guru. Nothing can do that for you, except for you yourself to look at yourself every time it occurs to you to do so, repeatedly, to look at yourself. And as I say always, nothing could be easier than that. It takes nothing. It takes no understanding. It takes no preparation. It takes no purification. It takes no merit. It takes no take nothing. After all, you are always here. You always know yourself. You are always aware of yourself. There's not a moment passes that you are not fully and absolutely aware of this reality that you're here. You're undeniably, absolutely undeniably here. Look and see if you are absent. Just look and see. What does it feel like to be absent? You are here. And the purpose of this practice of self-inquiry is not to cause the personal consciousness to gain a new identification with some supposed reality. It's not to cause anything to happen in the personal consciousness at all. It is to cause the false belief that you are the personal consciousness to disappear over time with the repeated application of the experience of reality, of you, of what you are. You can do anything you want. You can continue any practice that you care to continue. You can abandon any practice that you want to abandon. All of that is beside the point. In the process of continuing practice, in the process of abandoning practice, still you are here, unmoving, unchanged, unhelped, unhurt by any of it. So my hope for this day of Guru Purnima is that we see things for what they are, that we see spiritual utterance for what it is, that we neither condemn it nor worship it, that we see spiritual experience for what it is, that we neither condemn it nor worship it, and that we see reality for what it is, to be neither condemned nor worshipped, but to be looked at again and again. The looking is all that's needed. The looking at yourself directly, without mediation, without understanding. Just for a second. Every moment you can, repeatedly, look at yourself and see if it's not true what I say, which is that over time, the underlying sense of energetic anxiety goes away. The underlying sense of you being at stake, of something being at stake in this life, begins to vanish. The life itself reveals itself to be, no matter how hard or tormented or peaceful or gorgeous or sweet or wonderful it is, life itself reveals itself to be perfect. The instrument of awareness, the eyes and ears, the nose and tongue, the voice of awareness, looking at itself, speaking about itself, without regard to what you might think it should be saying, or thinking, or tasting, or seeing. This life is not what you are. You are the reality that this about which this life is a story, a segment of a story. So look at yourself. Be done with this false idea. Or at least find out whether there's any truth to all of this. Because you see, in all the other ways that we have been taught to seek freedom and understanding and realization, there seems to be no end to it. There is the requirement that what is said is accepted to be true. Here you find out for yourself. See for yourself whether there's any truth to any of this. I tell you, if you look at yourself as often as you can, you will find yourself free of the belief that you are your life, free of the fear that drives the life, free of the idea that you are changed, helped, or hurt by anything that comes and goes within you. And that's the gift of Ramana, who was not a guru in the way gurus are thought of, who did not present himself to be a guru, about whom the gurus of his time told their disciples to stay away from him, to avoid him, that he would ruin their practice. This is the gift of Ramana, who more than anybody else that I have ever come across in the spiritual arena had a down-to-earth sense of what's real. Ramana said when he was told that he was dying, he said to his disciples, "Where would I go? I am here. I am here." That's you, here, unmoving. See that. Not to convince your personal consciousness that that's the case, because nothing can convince your personal consciousness of anything, but to be free of the idea that you are this life. Oh boy, how I do go on. These meetings in this format are considerably different than meeting in satsang in person, because in this particular format, which I am still learning to use, all I see is a list of names. I don't see living faces looking at me and responding to me and so forth. It's a much different experience for me to have these meetings like this. I love meeting with you like this, and I promise to get better as time goes on. But I'm here to speak with you about self-inquiry. I'm here to speak with you about what I have seen to be in my own life the infallible method to put an end to misery in your lifetime, in your lifetime. And what I have seen to have no spiritual component to it whatsoever. So there. I'm done. Anybody want to talk to me?
We have Tom calling from England. I'm going to give you voice, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can, although you're echoing. I'm not sure why, but it's okay. I can hear you.
Great. Yeah, I didn't really have any questions to ask. I just wanted to say a couple of things, and one of them was just thanks, basically, to you, John. Because for a while now I've been searching, and I always really like.
Oops, what happened? Did you let go of your key?
Oh, yep, sorry.
Okay.
I'm back. I really like Ramana Maharshi's teachings, but I couldn't quite see how to get them in a practical sense. And I feel that you helped me with that, so I just wanted to say thanks for that.
Well, you're very welcome. That's what I live for, is to bring to whoever I can bring to the practical application of Ramana Maharshi.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say also to everyone else listening that your point is on taking this medicine and really do work.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, because I was a little worried that, you know, maybe you just got lucky or something. But I found in my own experience ever more recently that it really does work, and it's a great relief.
Oh, Tom, this is very good news. You know, when the more and more, this is the report I hear from people, and it is really important to people to hear this from those who have discovered for themselves that it's not just a stroke of luck that hit me, that this really works. This is practical. It's not spiritual mumbo-jumbo. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And that's what I thought, you know. It would be good for everyone to hear that. So, yeah, I wish everyone luck, and thanks again.
Okay, Tom. Enjoy yourself.
Thanks. I will.
Bye.
Bye.
Anybody else?
Yes, we have Tobias calling from France this time.
Tobias, how you do get around? Are you having difficulty? I guess so, huh?
Can you hear me now?
Hello? Now I can. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, Tom.
How you get around, Tobias? I
oh,
see
yes,
you from France.
Nice.
Yes.
Yes, I just wanted to say hello, Tom.
Hello, Tobias.
And
it's
I have
good
one
to hear
question.
From you. Okay.
You know, in spring, I experienced something I would call awakening. It was just clear that this here-ness is somehow that what Ramana talks about to be the self. But, you know, the search doesn't end somehow. I heard from so many people, they say they experience awakening like a sudden experience, and then it's somehow done, you know. But I experience it as, you know, the grip of the idea to be this life loses somehow with the time, you know, not with the sudden. Is this correct?
Yes, that is correct. I have no idea where from come these stories of instantaneous awakening, since the truth is that you have never been asleep. And the only thing that prevails and produces the idea of misery and separation is the belief that you are this personal life. And that just takes time to wear away. But the truth is that what you see as time goes on is that you have always known this, that this reality has always been in your awareness and has never been affected by anything.
And
yes.
That is the strange thing. Yes. This here-ness was always the same. Even if one experiences something like awakening, one realizes that it has always been like it is now.
Yes, that's right. That's the truth.
And
awakening
and
occurs, the experience of awakening, since it came, that experience must go. And it is no different in essence from any other spiritual experience, some of which are experiences of torment and longing. They come and they go, but you are never touched by any of it. You are the same, this here-ness.
Yes, this I experience the same way. And
yes.
Now it becomes more and more clear. It is like one can maybe say like a light. And
yes.
It is more and more shining over the story, this life. And
yes.
So the grip of the story weakens more and more, you know, but it takes time.
Yes. Yes, it takes time. You're absolutely right. You are absolutely on the right track. It's too late for you to turn back now.
Yes, because my life changes, you know. It comes more and more smooth. There are still phases or times where I fall back into, but these times become shorter and shorter, you see. It's,
yes.
But,
yes.
John, I want to thank you by my heart, you know. You were the teacher that did tell it me the way I could get it.
Well, that's my great good luck, Tobias.
I know Ramana since 20 years, John. And I never got it, you know, what he meant. But now if I read him again, it is so simple what he is saying. And before one thinks, oh, what does he mean? And one tries to interpretate it like this and that. And during my studies, I was at university, I did search for 1 year. And every morning I thought, now I have to find this self, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't to find, you know, because there were these expectations that it is something different than that
yes.
is here, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. But that's not from Ramana, and that's what you see now. Ramana is
yes.
very clear.
Yes, he is very simple.
This is such good news. I can't tell you how happy I am to hear this from you, Tobias.
And John, I just want to thank you. And I thought one time I just want to speak with you.
Well, I'm happy to speak with you. This is a great gift to me. And enjoy yourself and keep taking the medicine. And
I will do so, John. But, you know, now it is more automatically.
Yes, that's what happens. That's what happens. It takes over.
It's also in dreams, you know, if I sleep and so on, I do this investigation, you know.
Yes. Yes, I'm very familiar with that. This is perfect. Perfect. This is a perfect report.
And I, you know, even in my dreams, there's so many satsang in the meantime. I meet so many people. You also, you know.
Well, good.
Okay, John, I will stop now.
Okay.
And wish you a very nice time.
You too. Enjoy yourself. I'll speak to
you
again
John.
Someday, if we're lucky. Okay.
Okay, John.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Okay, anybody else, Carla?
Not at this point.
Well, does anybody else want to speak with me? Or, you know, it doesn't have to be to agree or to report on the wonder of self-inquiry. It can be to speak with me, to argue with me, too. Or there's no need to speak at all. But I'm here for a little while longer. So if it occurs to you to have a question or a report or a disagreement,
Rupam is calling, Western Australia.
Rupam. Hello, sweet Rupam.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
Hi, how are you? I can indeed. How are you?
I'm so great. I'm laughing away here. It's such a joy.
Okay.
I wanted to report an experience of right in the minute of a creative experience, I asked the question and just everything opened and flew and continued. And it made the whole experience worthwhile. Not for the experience, but for asking the question.
And what was the question?
Who's here? Who is up? Who is painting? Why on earth am I painting? And it seems as though it actually doesn't matter what you do, how you do it, where you do it. The only reason to do it is that the question will arise sometime and
yes,
more and more.
Right. That's right. That's the truth. And it really doesn't matter how you do it or why you do it or where you do it. There's no need to start doing anything, stop doing anything, to prepare yourself in any way, just when the thought arises to look at yourself, look at yourself. And the looking at yourself does all the work over time. Okay?
Yes, that's so clear. That's so clear. Thank you, John.
You're very welcome, Rupam. Give my love to Keith.
I will. He's very pleased I'm talking to you.
Oh, good.
But he's still asleep.
Oh, yes. Okay. That's good. Sleep is good. I like sleep. Okay, anything more, Rupam?
No, thank you, John.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Tom in England wants to ask a question.
Okay. Hello again, Tom.
Hi, John. Yeah, hello again. I wasn't going to speak again, but I thought I might as well since nobody else is too talkative right now.
Okay.
I mean, like I say, this business of self-inquiry has been, it's really effective and it's quite addictive, actually. And it's hard to put into words how I know that it's being effective, but it just seems that, you know, each day it becomes clearer that this feeling of being me doesn't belong to the personality or the character.
That's it.
It belongs to itself.
That's it, yeah.
Which is the reality that we're all looking for, whatever you want to call it. But so even though this is happening...
Just let me say one thing, okay? Because I'm sure that I don't like to nitpick about things, but I want to make sure that there's not a misunderstanding when I hear a way of speaking that can be come from misunderstanding, and
sure.
that is that we're not looking for reality. Reality isn't lost anywhere. We are merely looking at reality. You follow that?
Yeah, absolutely.
You see the difference. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I get that. But the thing that, you know, this mind still has questions that are, but won't leave.
That's okay.
And one of them is, if when the body-mind dies, or ceases to appear, shall we say, if it's just like deep sleep, where we have no experience other than just being, but, you know, in the way that is in deep sleep, well, that's kind of still quite sad for me.
And when this question arises and when the sadness that accompanies it arises, does it do anything to you? Does it change you or affect you?
Absolutely not, no.
No, of course not. So the usefulness of this question is to see that even in the presence of the sorrow that accompanies the expectation that that there might be nothing but the experience of deep sleep after the death of this particular body-mind, reality is untouched. You are the same. And that's the usefulness of it. Now, the fact of the matter is that the only way that you could possibly answer that question is from the time when the body mind of Tom is dead and gone. There's no way you can answer that question now. The Tom body mind, the personal consciousness of Tom, is itself a state. the sense of living consciousness is a state. It has appeared and it will disappear. The sense of deep sleep is a state that comes and goes within this consciousness, within this Tom consciousness bubble. It has appeared and it disappears. So these things are not very interesting. They're actually kind of beside the point to reality. And you must see that, you don't have to see, but you can if you wish see, that the personal consciousness of Tom is not the end of personal consciousness in the world. That you are not this personal consciousness, you are the reality from which springs all personal consciousness. So, you see that?
Yeah, I follow. Okay.
So, the question itself is without meaning, but it nevertheless, because of the deep-seated conviction that I am this life, this consciousness, because of how deep-seated that conviction is, the thought of the death of this personal consciousness is always accompanied by great sorrow. And the thought of it comes, the sorrow of it comes, the thought of it disappears, the sorrow of it disappears, and you remain the same as always.
Yeah. Will you let me ask one more question?
Yes, I will.
It's just how long until this belief, which is already eroding, disappears completely? Or at least how long was it in your experience?
It took me a long time. I was a hard case. A long time, a couple of years, before I realized that it had been some time since I had any concern about the vicissitudes of this person, and that it had been some time since I had seen how really sweet and wonderful it is to be conscious of this personal consciousness. But it takes time. So, you know, it differs. Depends on the predispositions of the individual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you find that your mind still wants to ask these annoying questions about, what will happen, not now?
No, I don't.
You know, in the future? No, that's brilliant.
They don't seem to come much at all anymore. Or if they do, I don't notice them.
That's great.
You follow me?
Yeah.
But, you have to see what it will be for you. The truth is that nothing changes except that which always changes. And that which always changes is the shape, the shifting, ever-changing shape of this personality. And, Alzheimer's relieves you of the nagging questions about what's going to happen in the future, too. So it's not the absence of these questions. It's not the goal here. The goal here is to rid yourself of the idea that you are subject to these questions.
Yeah.
You follow that?
But it would be a nice byproduct.
It would be a nice byproduct, yes. Okay?
Okay, well, thanks a lot, John.
I'm really happy to hear from you, Tom.
Cool.
Be well and stay in touch, okay?
Indeed.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Okay, I have a text message from Larry Knight in Gloucester, Virginia, and he's asked me this. He says, John, I want to ask a question, but I don't have a microphone. Is it possible that I could do self-inquiry the rest of my life and never have anything happen? How can I know I am making progress? I often feel discouraged because I feel like nothing is happening. I try to make it the main priority of my life, but my ego tells me I am wasting time and I should move on with the business of life. But my life has always been filled with struggle and suffering, and so I continue on with the self-inquiry, hoping to make some kind of progress. But it is a struggle at times, especially when my ego tells me that I am not keeping up with the Joneses. Well, here's the thing about self-inquiry, Larry. You can go on and continue keeping up with the Joneses and continue the inquiry at the same time. You can do whatever you want. You can remain engaged in any practice, spiritual or material, without having any problem with doing the inquiry. Because the inquiry has not as its purpose to bring about any change whatsoever in your life. It is to be expected that the inquiry, that doing the inquiry will produce no progress that you can see. The inquiry doesn't act upon the way that doesn't act upon the nature of your personality or its tendencies or its predisposition. Within the life itself, it may well feel like nothing is happening. Although, of course, things are always happening in the life. New ideas are coming, old ideas are going away, new desires appear, old desires disappear, and so forth, and that'll continue. But the point of the self-inquiry has nothing to do with fixing your life. Nothing. Nothing at all to do with fixing your life. The point of the self-inquiry is to look at what you really are as often as it's possible to do so. And the purpose of that is to rid yourself of the belief that you are your life and that what happens in your life puts you at stake, that the things that come and go within your life help or hurt you. And that is not to bring that understanding into your personal consciousness, because bringing the understanding into your personal consciousness just makes it a thing within your personal consciousness, which is not you. The point of the inquiry is to look at yourself, to do that as often as you can, and to do it as if it were medicine, and not to expect that the life is going to change. Now, I can tell you that if you do this, and this is very simple, this is not a spiritual practice, this is just stopping for a moment whenever it occurs to you to do so, and look and see, are you here? Is it not the case that you are here? You are present, and you are absolutely sure of that. That there's no question in your mind whatsoever. You are here. Just to look at that. Not to explain it or to understand it or to do anything with it, but just to get the taste of that. That background reality, which never changes, which is always the same. That background reality, which makes it a cliche when you see bits and comedy shows and things where an old geezer looks at himself in the mirror and is stunned at what happened. That's not me. I feel the same as I always have. I am the same now as I was when I was 3. Look at that. Just look at it. Look and see if even when, like you say, it is a struggle at times, even when the sense of struggle is present, look and see if it's not true that you are here. You are not absent. You are here. And that you're certain of it. And just taste that. Just for a second. It doesn't have to be for a long time. Just taste it. And then let the mind go back into its usual craziness. It doesn't hurt you. It doesn't help you. Just whenever it occurs to you, stop and look at this reality. Look and see, are you here? Is that not true? And over time, what you can expect to happen is that before you know it, your relationship with your life will lose the sense of strife and importance. It'll lose the sense of you being at stake in it and that there's something really important happening. And over time, as this idea that you are this life vanishes, you will see that you can finally absolutely just kind of relax into your life with a sense of intimacy that was never possible, where there is no holding things at arm's length. That's how you can tell. But you can't tell by looking to see something changing in your life. Your life's changing all the time. Your consciousness is changing all the time. Just look at yourself. Right now, look at yourself. And the next time it occurs to you, look at yourself. Look, 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 is it not true that you are not absent? You are here, as you always are, as you always have been. And if you pursue that practice and if you continue it, I promise you from my heart that the time will come when you will see for yourself without any question whatsoever what it is I'm talking about. And you will laugh. And you will see. Okay. And keep in touch with me. You can write to me. You know, I'm available by email, and sometimes it takes me a while to answer because there's only Carl and I here, and there's a lot to do. But I read everything as soon as it comes in, and I will answer you. So keep in touch with me. Let me know how you're doing. Okay? Okay. All right. Larry, I see, and please do write to me. Thank you very much, and I hope this is helpful. Personal suffering, does it have any effect on personal suffering? What is personal suffering? Personal suffering is entirely the outcome of the belief that you are your life and that what happens in this life affects you. Look and see, in the midst of the most energetic heat of torment, look and see. Look at yourself. See if the here-ness has changed, if it's affected by it. Okay? And let me know. Okay, now...
We have Faye from Canada. She sent you a text message.
Oh, Faye, you're here and you can talk. That's good.
She can't talk. She doesn't have a microphone. She sent you a text message?
Right. I she's next up. All right. Yes, Faye, I see you. And let me read what you have to say to me. John, can you go over using your desires for seemingly outside things like situations, relationships, things, or experiences as an ally instead of a distraction to self-inquiry? Using this life desire instead of wasting it, as you say, on acquiring and pushing away. I'm not sure I get it. But what I mean by that is this. The whole engine of the what we do within the life is driven by this desire to get what I want and to get rid of what I don't want. And most of our time in this life is spent managing or understanding or serving or denying or resisting or doing something in relationship to this fundamental desire to get what I want and to get rid of what I don't want. That's where we waste most of the energy of our attention, is on that struggle to get what I want and get rid of what I don't want. The way to use it as an ally instead of a distraction is when it occurs to you in the midst of being completely caught up in this game of trying to get what I want and get rid of what I don't want, and the accompanying sense of futility and anguish and torment and everything that goes with that, because you can't do it anyway. Just have it occur to you for 1 second to stop in that moment, as all of this is going on, just for a second, and look and see if you are here and affected or unaffected by, no matter how furious these relationships are. Just look and see. Are you here? Are you the same? Have you changed? Just for a second. And in that way, these experiences become an ally, because they become a reminder to see. And it's not to see in order to strengthen or develop or acquire a new understanding within your life that you are really, I don't know, eternal consciousness or any of that which is unaffected. But it's just a way of moving your attention back to this reality, just for a second. Because it is the looking that does the work. And any opportunity you get to look at reality, at this underlying, unchanging certainty of existence that you are, any chance you get to do that is money in the bank. So that's how they are an ally. And see if it's not true. And when you do that in the midst of the fire of desire and torment, and see that you are unchanged by it, that this here-ness is untouched by it, it will give you more encouragement to continue. So I hope that's of help to you, Faye. And if it isn't, send me another text message, and I'll, since you don't have a microphone, and I'll go at it. It's too bad we can't talk. And now Arnell. Hi, Arnell. Arnell says, no microphone here. And you may already have answered my question, but here goes. Why does looking at what I really am give me no satisfaction? Why am I so dismissive of it? Why does it feel like it's not enough? Is my mind playing tricks on me? And he puts the quote, puts quotes on me, which is a telling thing. The purpose of the inquiry is not to give you satisfaction. That's why. It has no power to satisfy you. The satisfaction that is sought within personal consciousness is already present in reality. The satisfaction that is sought within personal consciousness is fraudulent. Nothing has ever given you satisfaction. Any satisfaction that has come to you in your life has come by this, or at least any experience of satisfaction has come by sheer luck, and it comes and goes. The fact that you are dismissive of self-inquiry is beside the point. The fact that you feel like it's not enough is beside the point. Your mind is playing tricks on itself, and that's beside the point too. All you have to do is look at yourself. Whether it gives you satisfaction or does not give you satisfaction, look at yourself. Whether there is the thought patterns of dismissiveness about self-inquiry, or there is not such patterns, look at yourself. It is the looking that does the work. The satisfaction comes and goes. Dissatisfaction comes and goes. These things are aspects of your personality, and you have nothing to say about them. They operate on their own. When you are having no satisfaction, when you are dissatisfied, are you not still here? Have you changed any? Are you not still absolutely present? Look and see. Any excuse to look, just look. It's the looking that does the work. And I promise you with Ramana that the day will come when you will laugh at all this. And that day, as Ramana said, it will be exactly the same as this day. Exactly the same. no satisfaction, satisfaction, dismissiveness, still you are here. You are here, and you know it. Just look at that knowing as often as you can, and I promise you from my heart that everything else will be taken care of. Okay. And let me know, Arnell. You can write to me here again. You can... Okay, I see. Arnell responds, thank you for your unflinching and unwavering dedication to the only thing that is true, the only thing that I can be absolutely certain of. That's it. That's it. That's what you want to look at. The only thing that you can be absolutely certain of. That's exactly right. That's perfect. That's the target of the inquiry. Just stay with that, and everything will work out. Okay? And stay in touch, Arnell. It's good to see you. And Faye now says to me, so are desires actually here to help us awaken? Instead of what some spiritual teachings have said about desires being a hindrance to awakening. Nothing is here to help us awaken. We are none of us asleep. We are tricked by this deep-seated belief that we are the life. The reality is never asleep, and the reality is never absent. There is the whole story about the being things that occur to me, that come to me in order to hurt me or help me, is false. It is a storyline that can only occur and only have meaning within personal consciousness. So the antidote to this, the medicine for this, is that to look and see, not to find out whether desires help you awaken or desires are a hindrance to awakening, but look and see in the presence of desire, in the presence of the absence of desire, look and see if you are changed by any of it, if you are helped by any of it, if you are hindered by any of it. That's what does the work, to look at yourself. Everything is your ally in this. You are here. You are not helped or hurt by anything. Look and see if that's not true. Look at this absolute certainty that you are here and see if that ever changes. If that's ever absent, if that's ever missing, if it ever is enhanced or diminished. I hope you hear that. Okay, I hope that's helpful, and I'm glad to see that. Faye says, that's great. Thanks, John. Thank you, Faye. I'm happy to speak with you. Let me know how you're doing.
We have a message from Jane in New Zealand. She is with a group, and they gather together to listen to satsang. And she sent me a question. Did you get it? I asked her to resend to you. So should I read it? She doesn't
yes,
have
please.
A microphone. Okay, here it says, this is... Hi, John. This is a message from Jane in New Zealand, who is with Sarah and Anna from New Zealand. I wanted to ask a question about devotion. It seems Papaji was devoted to Ramana and Gangaji to Papaji, and even to some extent you with Gangaji. This love towards the teacher as a tacit recognition of the truth of what the teacher has realized themselves to be seems to be important in terms of meditating on what you want to become. Can you speak about this? As I see, a devotion towards looking at the reality of who I am is the Satguru more and more. Is turning to look at myself the devotion? And then she continues, there is a small group of us here in New Zealand who meet every Wednesday evening and we listen to your podcasts. These evenings are very wonderful for all of us, and we are all noticing how the simple teaching is making a true difference in all of us. Thank you, John. We love these evenings and we love you very much. And thank you for also making this so available to all so freely. I am noticing some lucid dreaming and seeing the choice in the dream in seeing that choice in the dream to change and control it and choosing to let it be what it is. Is this a byproduct of looking at myself?
This is very sweet. Yes, of course it's a byproduct of looking at yourself. The impetus to change and control things that occur within personal consciousness loses its strength as the belief that you are a personal consciousness weakens and vanishes over time. The whole desire to continue to engage in this internal warfare, which is what it is, this effort to change things and control things and so forth, goes away over time. Yes, of course that's so. Devotion to the teacher, or devotion and gratitude to any form, is an aspect of personality. No one can say, and I can't say, what Papaji felt like that he interpreted his devotion to Ramana. That devotion in personal consciousness is an aspect of personality. And similarly with Gangaji to Papaji, and similarly with me to Gangaji. I have a great love and a great sense of gratitude that Gangaji appeared in this life. Gangaji, the appearance of Gangaji in this life was concurrent and simultaneous with the first taste of reality in this life. And the continuing relationship with Gangaji in this life made it obvious to me and confirmed in me that reality and the truth of reality was available to me, not just to the great ones, but to me. And because of that, within this personality, there's a great love and a great gratitude for Gangaji. But that is an aspect of this personality. And it is absolutely the case that the true devotion to the Satguru is the looking at oneself, the looking at reality, because that is the only guru, is this reality that you are, this here-ness that never changes. That's the only reality. That's the only guru. And it is the inquiry itself is the only action of devotion that is appropriate to that. All of the other things are aspects of personality, and they come and go, and they change over time. They are affected by reflection and new understandings and all of that. But the devotion to reality, like reality itself, never changes. So I hope that's helpful. I hope that answers your question. I'm happy to hear from all of you. I love it when people gather together in a group for these purposes. It's an economical and efficient way to do these things. So hello to you and to Sarah and
Jane,
Sarah, and Anna. Hello to you. I love you all, and I'm happy to be with you like this. Please keep in touch and let me know how you're doing. And let me know if that is helpful to you, what I just said. Now I have a message from Anton in Sweden, who says, is there a way to introduce lucid dreaming and self-inquiry into sleep, or is it only a byproduct of awake inquiry? Yes, it's only a byproduct of awake inquiry, and it is according to the predispositions of the individual personality whether any particular experience or state arises within the personal consciousness. There is no way to expect that or to stop it from happening or to produce it. It is the predispositions of the individual personality that determine how the individual personality is affected by the light of reality as it begins to shine unimpeded by the belief that you are that life. Okay.
I just received a text message from Ornella in Pleasant Hill, California. She asked me, she says, thank John for me.
Well, you're very welcome, Ornella, in
Pleasant Hills.
Pleasant Hills. I know where
Pleasant
Hills
is. And we have Catherine calling from New Zealand, and she does have a microphone.
Okay. Catherine, it's good to see you. Catherine?
Hello, John.
Hi, hello. It's good to hear you again.
Yes.
Seems like only yesterday.
I think it was just 2 days ago.
Okay.
I just want to thank you for that conversation. And also just a very small report, which seems to be nothing, but when I'm doing the inquiry now, and all the sort of tormenting voices and that come, they seem like part of the inquiry now rather than something that shouldn't be here or that is proving that I'm doing it wrong.
And so it makes,
yeah, it's made an enormous difference.
That's really good news. Were you going to say something more?
No, no. It's just something so small can change the whole way that you see it.
Yes, it's amazing, isn't it? I'm so happy to hear this, Catherine. I'm very grateful to you for telling me about this. Please keep in touch with me too, okay?
Yeah, thank you very much, John.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that's it. I am out of time, out of breath, and out of the capacity to speak very much. So we're gonna bring an end to this satsang on Guru Purnima. Or Vyasa Purnima, or U Purnima. I can't tell you again how happy I am to be with you, how wondrous it is to me that this technology has given us the opportunity to be able to meet like this with people all over the world. I continue to hear amazingly confirming and encouraging reports from people who have actually begun to take the medicine, who have actually started to look at themselves and who have heard something clear enough to see what it is that I am speaking of as the target of this inquiry, which is this ineffable here-ness about which nothing can be said, about which even here-ness is saying way too much. If you look and see at any time in this moment, if you just stop for 1 second and look and see if it is not true that you are indisputably here, present, and if it is not true that that certainty that you are here is itself not always here, never changing, never moving, never hurt or helped by anything that happens in the life. If you will do that as often as you can, the purpose of this inquiry will be alive in you as you see that no matter what happens in the life, no matter whether there are good experiences or bad experiences or dissatisfaction or boredom or anything else that comes and goes in the life, that the sense that you are at stake in it will gradually depart. That's the purpose of the inquiry. Not to do anything about the life. Just to look at yourself. Look at this certainty that's always here. And that'll do the work. And I just got a short note from Carla to the effect that my dear friends George and Lorraine want to speak for a moment. So I will talk to you, George and Lorraine, for a moment, and then I'll just hang up and go away. George, Lorraine, you know that you can push your push to talk button and talk now, right? You have been, okay, there you are. George? Well, okay. We are obviously, George and Lorraine are having some technical difficulties. Maybe we can, sometime during the period before the next meeting, you could get together with Carla and we can work out the technical difficulties so we can speak with each other. Or we can talk too. So again, everybody, look at yourself. That's all there is to do. That does all the work. You can keep doing everything else you're trying to do. You can keep trying to fix yourself. It can't hurt you. Just look at yourself every time it occurs to you to do so. I love you all so much. And I am so grateful for these times and satsang with you. I am your servant. Om Shanti. Thank you for satsang. Be well. Enjoy your life. Bye.
Thank you for being here today with us. It's really wonderful to meet with you like this. Our next world meeting in Satsang with John will be on August 12th at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. There are many resources available on our website at riverganga.org that can give you support during the times between our online meetings. This room is open 24/7, and you can use it to talk about self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi and share your experiences with one another. You can also use this room at any time to check and configure your computer settings ahead of time before our Sunday meetings. You can listen to recordings of meetings in Satsang with John on the podcast page on our website, where you can also sign up to receive notifications when a new file is uploaded. We have a discussion forum called Conversations, where you can be in touch with people who are in Satsang with John all over the world. Look for the link Conversations under the menu Community. You can order video and audio recordings of meetings in Satsang with John at riverganga.org. Click on Supporting Satsang on the top navigation bar to get to our online store. You can find detailed information about meetings in Satsang with John by clicking on Satsang Events on the top navigation bar, then on Schedule. You can also listen to recordings of past worldwide online satsangs on our archives page. The recording of today's meeting will be available in a couple of days. Click on Library on the top navigation bar, then choose World Meetings Archives. You can read complete transcriptions of meetings in Satsang with John. Just click on Library on the top navigation bar, then choose Transcriptions. You can sign up to receive our monthly email newsletter with news about meetings in Satsang with John and about new additions to our website, and also a reminder a few days before each of these online meetings. Click on Community on the top navigation bar and then go to Newsletters. John's blog is located at www.johnsherman.org, and you can also post your comments and reports to John there. Our next 5-day silent retreat will be from November 2nd through 6th at the Meditation Mount here in Ojai. It's filling up quickly. Registration is free. If you're planning to join us for this retreat, you must email me or call me to register. For more information, please go to our website and click on Satsang Events and follow the links until you get to the retreat page. You can always email John with your reports and questions at johnsherman@riverganga.org. He'll be really happy to receive your email. All meetings in Satsang with John are free of charge. Our work is entirely supported by donations. The River Ganga Foundation is a 501c3 public nonprofit organization recognized by the IRS. All donations to the foundation are tax deductible according to IRS regulations. More information available at riverganga.org/support. We look forward to being with you again in Satsang at our next world meeting with John on Sunday, August 12th at 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Thank you very much.